All right. We are joined right now by District Attorney Hiller Moore. District Attorney Moore, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Brian. How are you doing today?
I am doing very well. I appreciate you hopping on the phone this morning. We've got a lot of ground to cover. Let me open things up with you, though. Where do you want to start this morning?
I guess we could maybe start, give you an update of where we are on some of the numbers that we typically talk about. And that may be a good place to start.
Yeah, let's go there.
So at this point on fatal overdoses, we're still fairly equal to where we were last year. And it fluctuates a lot on our numbers. But we're at this point down 3% from last year at this time, which any decrease is good. But it's, we surely want a much bigger decrease than that. Just last week, it was 1%. So this week, we're up to 3%. It does fluctuate. Better news, I guess, is that the non-fatal overdoses are down 15%. So that's a good number, hopefully meaning that that's a good indication that the fatal overdoses will eventually slow down. Also, somewhat of a good note, I think we talked about this once before, like 4 months ago, the parish as a total, we were down 40% in homicides parish-wide, which includes all of the agencies. Things kind of caught up and things got a little lopsided in the parish, but we saw more homicides in the parish in 1 month than they normally ever have in a year. So that skewed numbers a little bit. But at this point, we're down 12% overall, and that's all of the agencies. The city police is actually down much more than that, about 20 or 20-something percent. So that's a good news, but even a better news and the best indication of how we're doing as a city is the non-fatal shootings. And we are down 24% at this time than we were last year, bringing us to a total of deaths of currently 68. And last year we were at 76 or something like that. Yes, 76. So, you know, we're going in the right direction. And as we talked earlier, Orleans is, you know, kind of going the other way. But we're at least headed in the right direction right now.
District Attorney Hiller Moore is our guest. You actually stole my follow-up question when it came to the homicides. My follow-up question was about the non-fatal shootings, because when there is a homicide, it is always in the news. Non-fatal shootings don't always make it into the news. So knowing that we're down on both, I mean, to what do we attribute this?
You know, you always want to think that it's programs that you're doing and the action, the hotspot policing, all the crime strategies, the outreach that everyone does every day, and the hard work of the men and women on the police and sheriff's department. But you never know. It fluctuates a lot. But that's what our hope is. It's hard to really put your finger on any one thing. And I think it's always going to be a combination. And, you know, being down right now, particularly during the summertime, it's pretty good news right now, because summer, as you know, has been fairly brutal here and in other other cities. So hopefully we can finish the year out with some decent numbers. Still going to be too high for a city our size, but, you know, showing progress.
No, absolutely. And not just progress, but year-over-year progress as well. 2021 was just downright terrible. And
when we saw...
Yeah. Go ahead.
150 in 2021. Mm-hmm. Then last year, 114. And this year so far, 68. So, yeah, you know, no one's tooting the horn yet, but it is a good direction.
No, you 100% right. District Attorney Hiller Moore is our guest on the air with Hiller, we call it. And District Attorney, when you see it drop down after a record year, you could take that with a grain of salt. When you see the next year continue to drop, at what point do we actually call this a trend and say that something's working?
Yeah, it does take years as a trend to keep that up. So, you know, I think that we have to give this some time. Some other good news is that we are going to reinvigorate the former group violence reduction strategy, formerly kind of known as BRAVE, and then adopted by Truce on a different level. But it looks like if we get the council's approval for expenditure of the money that the chief and the mayor have found, we're going to partner again with the National Network for Safe Communities on intensive group violence intervention strategies. And the chief has already dedicated two or three additional officers, even though he's down officers, to this group violence effort, because we know that's where the majority of our killings and shootings come from, that and drug deals, in conjunction with his hotspot policing and data-driven policing. So, you know, we're hopeful that we'll have a bigger impact.
District Attorney Hiller Moore is our guest. Hiller, if you could walk us back through time a little bit. For those that are relatively new to Baton Rouge or might just need a little bit of a refresher, walk us through Brave, how it got started, what it got done, and why we have to re-up it today.
So typically, I'm elected in 2008, and the homicide numbers were consistently 82, 88, 80, 81, 84 in 84 and 2013. We heard about the program with Dr. David Kennedy, that's group violence intervention. It was just starting around the country, actually started in Boston. And we reached out to him and asked him, could we set up such a program here? We tried for grants. We were not successful at obtaining the grants to pay for it. So we did an ad hoc type of thing when Jeff LaDuff was the chief. And they kind of helped us a little bit on the side, but we're not a full partner. And when we instituted that group violence strategy, it is you identify the group members and you give them the message that if you kill or shoot, we're going to come after not only the shooter, but everyone else. But if you want help, we're going to give you help. The following year, once we started that, so we went from 84 in 2013 to 63 in 2014 to 77 in 2016. And then our lowest was 2017 at 61. So we know that we have strategies that out there that can work. And then, as you know, in 2017, all hell broke loose. Yeah. And that year, we had 103 homicides. I mean, a big jump of 40-something. And then, fortunately, the next 2 years, we went down to 86 and 83. And then COVID hit and things went crazy. And it looks like now we're kind of getting back to normal. But normal is not good at 80. And we have to be mindful of that.
District Attorney Hiller Moore is our guest. Do we know why all hell broke loose in 2017?
Well, it was the Alton Sterling time, around that time, and then the flooding. Things got disrupted during the flooding, but then they came back after everyone got back into their homes. And the different drug networks got back together again and started getting their territory back and started shooting more.
What does the implementation of Brave look like, or what will it look like today?
It's going to be heavy actionable intelligence that the law enforcement partners can obtain information on who are the trigger pullers, who are the group and gang members that are out there causing all of the a lot of the trouble, and getting enough intelligence on them that if someone from that group or gang shoots, that we're able to take immediate action against all of them. But we also, there's also a messaging part that we know, we call them into a meeting or have a custom notification, which is in person, and say, look, we know who you are and we know who you're associated with, and we're watching you. We understand what's going on. If someone gets hurt or someone gets killed as a result of you or your group members, we're coming after everybody, and it's going to be swift and certain. That's the hard part, is being swift and certain, because our system is so backed up. But at least the enforcement part can be swift within a week, 2 weeks after a shooting or killing, that we're able to take action. But that takes a heavy load on the police department and the sheriff's office intelligence divisions. Because, as you know, we're down many officers.
Yes.
So that's the way that that it looks. And it's, you know, it's fair, because we're telling you, we know who you are, we know what you're doing, we know who you want to try to kill. If this happens, we're going to come after you. But we have to have that intelligence to take action.
District Attorney Hiller Moore is our guest. Can I drop you on hold real quick? Because I've got a stack of follow-up questions on this, and I want to revisit the opioid overdoses as well. So, District Attorney Hiller Moore, we will continue in just a little bit. Hey, on the air with Hiller Moore, rolling right along. District Attorney Hiller Moore is our guest. All right. As we were headed into break, District Attorney Hillermore, as we were headed into break, I said I had some follow-up questions on Brave. And I think the two biggest questions I have, number one, when it comes to implementation, the real-time crime center being added to the mix has the potential, when mixed with Brave, to be an absolute game-changer for bringing in intelligence and converting intelligence into action.
So, sure, I think that is helpful. Also, we have the Crime Strategies Unit, which we have the National Guard counter-drug intelligence analysts that look at all of the data and synthesize that and hand it out to the police and the sheriff. But when we're talking about intelligence, it's actually more of officers, intelligence officers, meeting with people to get intelligence on the street from people giving us that type of information as opposed to data. Mm-hmm. We can get data. We are data rich. It's actually the actual street knowledge that a number just doesn't show you that is the hard part.
My other follow-up about Brave is about the chief of police, who is announced to be on his way out potentially by November or the end of the year. How do we work when we have a new chief in place? How do we work the transfer there to make sure that this program that we've all wanted back for some time, that this program stays, doesn't fall a step behind or fall to the wayside?
Yeah, good question. The chief is behind this, as is the mayor and the sheriff. They're all behind it. And I'm sure whoever the new chief is, it's hard to say no to this because it just works when done properly. It's going to be funded. They've already dedicated the manpower there. It's there. What we'd like to always see and what is suggested in cities that do this is that it has to be ingrained in the DNA, the organizational chart of the department, because if it's not, then as you're suggesting, a new administration can come in and say, let's just do away with it.
Right.
And it's there in the chart and ingrained in the DNA of the department, and people accept it and work it, and it doesn't go away with a administrative change.
One more, and then we're going to move back to the opioids, and that one more is about the continuity of it. I would imagine a program like this involves a lot of building of trust, and that doesn't happen overnight. Will those involved with Brave, when it comes to gathering that intelligence on the street, will those involved with Brave basically be starting from scratch, or is there a way to recall what was done before?
Oh, no, there's been no lapse in obtaining intelligence. It's
okay.
It's continuing.
District Attorney Hillermore is our guest. Going to pivot now from the Brave program, which is fantastic news that it's back. I mean, if I can editorialize for just a second, I remember when it was first launched. I remember what it was promised and how it delivered. So glad to hear it on that front. Let's move over to the opioid crisis, if we could. Because we did a story on that. We had it in our top stories in trending this morning. We are looking at another bad year as far as the numbers are concerned. However, we're not looking at another record year, to be sure. Are we finding sustainable solutions to getting this stuff off of our streets?
Look, that's a good question, but a hard answer. And So if we do not stop it at the border, then, it's not going to stop. We could do all we can here locally on the streets. And look, my hat's off to the Sheriff's Office narcotics team, Captain Tanner Jenkins and his crew. They bust ass on this, and they make big cases. They make very good cases that are solid, and they're getting the fentanyl dealers, not just someone who uses. Very complicated cases, but they're doing a very good job, but we still see it continuing on the street. So we have to keep this effort up, but it's coming in through outside of the United States.
Right.
And it's coming in at record pace. And if the federal government doesn't help us and step up and work with these other countries, we're going to continue fighting that fight and probably going to continue losing it at that level. And I'm surely not for legalization of any of this. I think it's a bad move, but these local folks need help.
Okay, so and when it comes to it coming in across the border, you're the district attorney here. We have an East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's Office and a BRPD. We can kick it all the way up to state police. No matter how you break it down, we're not getting to the border locally. So where does the cooperation come in? Where is the help coming in that y'all need from a federal level?
I think it starts with the White House on down to State Department. And, I mean, at that level, it's maybe even CIA-worth type stuff. It is it's a high-level communications that those people on those levels need to have with other countries, and then get the assistance of the United States of slowing this stuff down and checking folks coming through the border. It's also dark web as well. So these are well-organized groups that are, they keep sending and sending and sending in hopes that some of it gets through. And if they have to take a loss on stuff, they will. They don't want to. But, it's a significant problem because everybody is a dealer of heroin and fentanyl nowadays compared to back in the day when there was one person that was a dealer. Now, as you know, we have increased the penalties for distribution of fentanyl this session.
Yeah.
And now if you are found with less than 28 grams, it's 5 to 40 with a minimum of 5 years. More than 28 grams, it's 7 to 40 with a minimum of 7. And then when you get to the higher numbers, it's up to 99 years in jail. And if 250 grams, it's minimum 25 up to life. The other thing that's going to be helpful for us is with these overdoses, that if you distribute fentanyl, we can prove you did, and someone overdosed or suffered serious bodily injury or death. Mm-hmm. Plus, we add 5 years to your distribution sentence. So it's sometimes very hard to convict the dealer of murder. It's a jury issue. But convicting them of distribution of the drug when someone dies or is injured, we are able to get more time and hopefully have an impact.
District Attorney Hiller Moore is our guest. So I guess it was it 2 weeks ago, I believe, there was a press conference with yourself, the sheriff, the coroner, and State Representative John Stefanski about the bill that got passed and signed into law that increases the penalties for distribution of fentanyl. When it came to questions about whether or not the dealers know what they're dealing, far as yourself and as far as Sheriff Gautreau was concerned, there was no love lost for those who might be selling something that they might not know what it is.
No, they know exactly what they're selling, and that's why they're selling it.
Right.
And otherwise, they wouldn't be in business. So it's a shame that the folks that have this addiction want this. There are outlier cases where someone may buy cocaine or buy marijuana and it may be laced with fentanyl, even the smallest amount. That's generally not the case, but generally the buyer wants the fentanyl for particular reasons which are hard to explain.
District Attorney Hiller Moore is our guest. Let's pivot this topic from the prosecution end to the prevention end. Because as you pointed out in the press conference and Coroner Dr. Bo Clark pointed out in the press conference as well, this has got to be a two-pronged approach. When it comes to any market out there, and this drug market is nonetheless a market, you've got supply and you've got demand. Prosecution reduces supply. What are we doing to curb demand?
Yeah, so it's a business, and we have to change the business model. And I don't know if you saw yesterday, I think in the news, where we are getting the first round of money from the opioid settlement. And the money is going to be distributed through the mayor's office, and different entities are coming up with plans as to how their office is going to handle whatever money they get. They've asked for budgets. So ours is kind of twofold. We have a When You Are Ready campaign. That is, we go out to the hotspots that we find through the Crime Strategies Unit and pass out cards and have counselors and workers that go out there. Then we measure decreases in overdose deaths at those locations. Also for enhanced prosecution of drug dealers of fentanyl, and our digital cell phone division, looking at phones that folks that overdose and die have to find out if we can get information as to who the dealer is. So that's our effort. It's the East Baton Rouge Parish Overdose Coalition, made up of the sheriff, the police, coroner, mayor, many others, EMS, state police, DEA. And so that plan right now is coming together and everyone are submitting their proposals. So hopefully that money can be put to good use but we do have to do both sides. It's got to be treatment. It's got to be stopping the demand and the supply.
Got 2 minutes left with District Attorney Hill or Moore, and I greatly, greatly appreciate multiple segments this morning. In these last 2 minutes, I want to pivot and ask you about a question that has been lingering since COVID. How are we doing with the backlog?
We're still struggling with the backlog, but things are surely much better than that. Since COVID, or right when COVID was starting, we took a look at how we as an office processed cases and handled cases and tried them. And for the last 2.5 years, we've been working on a remodel of the office, which we just instituted 2 weeks ago, where we've changed our office to 3 different bureaus. We've been doing business the same way for decades. And we now have a regular units of court that handle day-to-day operations, which are critical. We also have a third bureau that's going to be comprised of folks that do not have to go to court day in and day out, and can stay back and prepare these difficult cases for trial and have them ready to go. And hopefully we will see the backlog decline, particularly those with, you know, major cases, homicides, big drug cases. And that's what the plan is, so that we can have our regular line DAs handling serious cases like guns and possibly murder cases, but another group that can really look at the more complicated cases and take the time, because most of these guys are in court till 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the evening. It's hard to prepare for a trial when you have everything else to do. Their caseloads are enormous.
Well, you got the Hamid Ghassemi case off your plate.
Yeah, it's 8 years of very hard, tedious work and difficult case. Dana Cummings did an excellent job. The defendant was well represented. Judge Tarvel Smith did a great job keeping everything in line. And then we met with the jury afterwards. They were they paid attention. They gave him every chance they could. And, you know, after looking at the evidence, they returned the verdict in 2 hours. And this was a real emotional case, one that's, man, if you knew all of the facts, if you were able to see it all, it was interesting from our standpoint, but still sad.
He is District Attorney Hiller Moore. We visit on a regular basis, probably not regular enough, though. District Attorney Moore, I always appreciate the time. Thanks for hopping on board.
Thanks, Dan.